Welcome back. Coming to you live from Coast Toronto affiliate Talk Radio AM 640. Well, that piece of vinyl is a little scratchy, but I like it that way. That's Esther Williams and Just Say Goodbye. What's it like to grow up psychic in a family of psychics? Michael Bodine was only 7 when his family made a shocking discovery. He and his mother and his siblings, including his sister, the renowned Echo Bodine, are all psychic. What was it like to grow up in a house teeming with ghosts and psychic experimentation, contending with a mind-reading mother? Now, isn't that like a child's worst nightmare? Your mother knows your very thoughts. Can't pull one over on her. What was it like to befriend a spirit boy and hunt ghosts with his sister? And what happens when Michael's psychic talents become more of a burden than a blessing? We'll talk about all this and more when psychic Michael Bodine joins us, when Coast to Coast AM continues in mere moments. Michael Bodine was very young when he discovered his psychic abilities. He spent his childhood studying with established psychics and going to psychic camp, somewhat reluctantly, to gain a greater understanding of his gifts. Through the loving support of his mother, May, he was able to mature in his practice while staying true to his own creative style. Michael has been a professional psychic for more than 35 years, giving readings, performing ghost bustings, and speaking at events and conventions. And his clients range from celebrities like Melanie Griffith and Gary Busey to financiers and dog walkers. His book, Growing Up Psychic, From Skeptic to Believer, chronicles his life and path of coming to terms with his gifts. He's currently working on his second book and writes a weekly column for True Magazine. Michael Bodine, welcome to Coast AM. How are you?
Hi, Richard. I'm just swell, thanks.
So, 7 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, what was this, like a family meeting? Michael, we've got something to tell you. How did this happen? You discover when you're 7 that not only are you psychic, your mother psychic, your siblings are psychic. What was it? How did they break it to you?
Well, they didn't really break it to me. We started having these really odd experiences, like when I was a kid. We didn't grow up in an old house or anything like that. We grew up in a brand new house in a brand new suburb. It wasn't an Indian burial ground or anything like that. It was like a suburb, you know. It was like, you know, it was a great place to grow up. And but for some reason, we started having all these weird experiences. And I didn't know anything about ghosts or psychic stuff. I don't think anybody in my family really did. We just, these things started happening. The very first thing that happened was, one of my siblings was downstairs. He was learning how to play the drums. He was like 14. I was 7. And he was down there playing the drums, and he sucked. He was just learning, so it sounded terrible. And we were all eating dinner, and all of a sudden it sounded really good, like he was playing really tight. And then that went on for about 5 minutes, and then all of a sudden we heard the doors fly open and the drum sets being knocked over, and he came running upstairs, and he was scared. He was scared of that. And he was like a really cool teenager kind of guy. I never seen him scared before. And so when I saw him, it was really odd, and he didn't really want to talk about it. He just kind of stood there, but we all heard everything. And finally my mom got him to tell us what happened. And he said he was playing the drums and he saw this black guy come through the wall, through the den wall. And it moved in front of him and just parked himself in front of where my brother was playing. And so he sat there and just, that's when it sounded really good, because he was so scared. He was just, the adrenaline was going, and he was playing really good. And he looked up a couple times and he saw this thing, and he just kept getting more scared. And finally he asked whoever this was to please leave. And it did, went through the other wall. And that's when he came flying upstairs. And when he told all this stuff, you know, none of us really believed him, because we really didn't believe in that kind of stuff. But there was this like real strange feeling in the air, like there was something going on. And then about a week later, we were all sitting around eating dinner again, this time with my brother, because he wouldn't go downstairs alone. And we had this Lazy Susan, and a salt shaker got up, and we were all talking. We were just, you know, having regular talking. And this thing got up and moved across the table and dropped between my father and my mother. And it wasn't like there was organ music or anything like that going on. It was just, you're looking at this thing going, what the hell? And it dropped, and we thought maybe my brother had hooked up some sort of pulley system or something, because we had been giving him so much crap about, you know, seeing his ghost and maybe he should invite his ghost over for dinner and blah, blah, blah. But when this thing hit the ground, it just kind of all shook us out of it. We're like, what was that? What was that? And my dad got really mad, and my mom was nervous. And I'm the youngest of four kids. My sister Echo is the oldest. And so we didn't know what to think. We were just like, we didn't know what to think. But more and more stuff kept happening. You'd open up a cupboard and the stuff would slide out in your hand, and you'd think that was odd. Or you'd walk someplace and somebody would tap you on the shoulder and you'd turn around and nobody was there. Or, you know, just weird stuff. Just, you know, lights going on and off. And it wasn't at any particular time or it didn't. Sometimes it happened to a couple of us, or sometimes it just happened to one of us. But it kept happening. Just weird stuff just kept happening. We didn't attribute it to being psychic, and we didn't know what it was. And finally, my mom, because she was a stay-at-home mom, she was having more of these experiences. She decided to go talk to our minister to find out, you know, what the hell was going on. And this minister suggested that she go to a psychiatrist because he thought she was nuts. So she did. She went to a psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist said it was because of some sort of feminine thing. And
oh dear.
Yeah, she went to everybody, and finally she ended up going to this psychologist that, like, basically worked out of her truck. And and this lady told her to go to, we live in Minneapolis, and she said there's a psychic or a medium in St. Paul named Mrs. Olson, and you should go talk to her. And so that's what my mom did. And the psychic or this medium, Mrs. Olson, she told us, or told my mother, my sister and my mother both went to this medium, and she told us that we were all going to be doing, we were all going to develop our psychic awarenesses, and that we were going to use it and write books and blah, blah, blah. And at the time, like I said, I was only seven. I didn't want to do anything like this. And I don't think my sister Echo was into it either. My sister Echo was more into having a thousand kids and just being a, you know, stay-at-home mom too. And so when we heard all this from Mrs. Olson, it wasn't exciting. You know, it wasn't like, oh boy, this is great. My mom was more excited about it. She was more like, oh, this is really cool. We should learn as much as we can. But I know I wasn't excited about hearing anything like this. But like I said, my mom really, really got into it. And so she started, see, this is back in the 60s, and back then, you know, psychics were considered like a mental illness. You know, like if you went to a psychic, there was, you know, you just didn't do that. It was really
sure.
Underground. So
there was no coast to coast AM, Michael. People didn't talk about this stuff.
No, not like now. You spit, you hit a psychic, you know, but back then.
You wouldn't want to do that.
No, sometimes you did. But yeah, but back then we you had to really, you know somebody who knew somebody.
Right. But Michael, it's strange because, like, you're living this suburban life in the Twin Cities, and then all of a sudden it descends like an iron curtain on your house, and you're having paranormal activity. What changed? Do you remember? Did somebody bring, you know, an armoire into the house that wasn't there before, or some haunted object? Can you pinpoint, do you think?
What I was told was that we were supposed to, it was sort of like trial by fire, you know, like they were going to introduce us to all this stuff. And what was going to happen was we were going to learn because we had to learn. Because it really got to be weird, you know? I mean, you just couldn't, things kept moving, you know? You'd go to grab something and it would move. You know, it was just like you kind of had to, I really believe that the reason why all this stuff was happening was because we were supposed to develop it or learn about it, and you know, that or move, which, you know, I would have been all for. But my mom, she you know, she loved it. So there really wasn't any specific, like, thing. You know, it was like, okay, here, learn about this stuff. And man, you know, we did. My mother started going to these little like underground churches where all these little people that were learning about this psychic stuff were hanging out, you know, and then they started coming to the house because, you know, it had heat and, you know, it was comfortable, and it was a nice house. And so that's how I grew up, with all these psychics learning what to do and, you know, how to develop it and what it was all about, and, you know, different kinds of psychics. And, you know, I didn't like it. I thought it sucked because I didn't like coming home and seeing a ghost in the chair, you know, or it was embarrassing. You know, I'd bring friends of mine home and they'd see a ghost and they'd run out and, you know,
Full-on apparitions? Full-on apparitions.
Yeah, you could like, see, back then we didn't know what we were doing. So, you know, we were doing all sorts of stuff, you know, having seances all the time and, you know, just doing stuff that you probably wouldn't do now. But because my mom was just learning and because all these other people were just learning, you know, we were doing all sorts of stuff. And, like, some of the problems were that you'd get, like, ghosts. Yeah, like, you know, a few times I brought friends home with me and a ghost would walk by. Or even if they didn't see a ghost, you know, they would, a friend of mine would go to the refrigerator and it would open up by itself, you know, or, you know, it was just embarrassing stuff. Like, and we tried to poo-poo it, like, oh no, it's, you know, that just happens. The door just swings open, or, you know, don't worry about the lights. They do that every once in a while. Or, you know, we just kept trying to, like, say it wasn't really what it was, but, you know, that's the way it was. It kept getting worse. Well, not worse, I suppose. It just more and more stuff kept happening. And so, you know, part of our learning was to go to different haunted houses. You know, people would talk about things happening. And so we'd go to the house and my mom loved it. You know, how like some people love storms and gardening and all that. My mom loved this stuff. She was into everything and she didn't care, you know, if it was, it was scary or not. You know, she, the more stuff would move around, the more it was interesting to her. And I think for her, it was like an empowering thing because my dad was like a big guy and he was really smart. And for my mom, this was kind of like an empowering thing, something that she had knowledge over that he didn't really like it all that much. He thought it was ridiculous, but he couldn't ignore it either. In fact, after a few years of stuff going on, my mother and father were playing chess and one of the chess pieces got up and moved and dropped in my dad's lap. And he said, "Oh, the hell with it." And he moved out right after that. He just couldn't.
Really?
Yeah, there was just too much stuff going on all the time. And
this broke the family up.
Yeah, I agree. It did. And so I hated it. I just thought this was terrible. And the people that would come to the house, Richard, these people were just, they were odd, you know? They just, you know, they would sit and they'd hum all the time, or they would, you know, they were practicing all sorts of different things. Or, you know, like when I would come home from school, I was always hungry, but back then these psychics would like make a plate for a food for the spirits, you know, to come in and smell the food or whatever they did. And so I'd go have a bite and I would just get yelled at, you know, if there was a plate of food, I would think it was for me. Or,
Did you ever, Michael, think about running away?
Oh my God. Yeah. In fact, I think I did, but I didn't get very far because my mom was a psychic, so she, you know, she knew what was going on. But
three steps ahead of you, yeah.
Yeah, oh my God, that was tough. That was tough to have a psychic mom. She always knew stuff was going to happen before it did. But it's weird too, Richard, because when I was a kid, I always saw colors around people, and I just thought everybody else did too. But it turns out that those are auras, you know, people have auras. I just thought it was normal to see those kind of things. And I knew stuff was going to happen before it did. I thought that was normal too. I didn't know it had anything to do with being psychic. I just thought that was normal. So it was, in some ways, it was helpful to know that I was, that it had an explanation. But for me, it sucked growing up in this situation because, I wanted to be normal. You know, I just wanted to be a normal guy and I like my normal life. And, you know, the weird thing about this stuff is when you start doing this stuff, things start to have more meaning, you know, like life has a different meaning. It's not just about money or what car you drive or anything like that. It's more about the purposes of life and the reasons for this thing or that thing. And, you know, I didn't want to be a deep guy and I just didn't. So, for me,
well, it's pretty heady stuff for a 7-year-old. I mean, I don't know what your interests were. Maybe you wanted to be the next Rod Carew and play with the Minnesota Twins. I don't know, but
I wanted to be a football player. I wanted to be a pilot. I just, you know, I loved all that stuff. And but I went to football camp and I went to basketball camp, but then I had to go to psychic camp, you know, because
there was such a thing back then.
Well,
or you mean just at the house? It was basically
We went to like these. My mom called it psychic camp because she'd go, okay, come on, you got to come with me, because I was the youngest, and she, you know, I always had to tag along to these places, and we would go on these long drives to different places like Michigan, or, you know, just we'd drive forever, and we back then, like I said, it was very much underground, and so psychics would meet in these like wooded areas and different spots, and each camp or each event would have different meanings. Like some of them were about nature spirits, or some of them were about you know, reincarnation or life after death, or, you know, they'd have different themes. And one of them was about like we went to this one in Michigan, way out there. It took forever to get there, but my mom, when we finally get there, my mom says, okay, I want you to behave, because I was a pretty hyper kid and sarcastic, and I, you know, like I said, I didn't really like all this stuff. So she warned me that I needed to just behave this time, because this time we were going to see vampires. And that for me was probably the most interesting camp that I'd been to.
How old are you at this point?
I'm probably 10 or 11 at that point.
10 or 11. I don't know about you, Michael, but at 10 and 11, I was still on the fence about the existence of vampires. I mean, I remember, you know, the Night Stalker and nightmares for the next 20 years. So if I'm told I'm going to a camp in the woods and there may be vampires.
Well, she didn't tell me, you know, pull down to this thing. It was like, you know, The Hobbit. You drive down these wooded areas and you get to this clearing and there'd be all these little tents set up. And she, you know, that's when she said, okay, now I need you to just be calm and we're going to go see vampires. Okay. Don't yell at them. Don't say anything. Just listen. And sure enough, now they didn't call themselves vampires. They call them something else. I forget what it was, but these people were the strangest things I've ever seen. Well, actually I've seen some strange stuff, but at that time they were really strange. Their skin, you know, those spring rolls, they had that skin of spring rolls, like that you could see right through it, translucent kind of, it was, and they looked
like rice paper.
Yeah, like rice paper. And they were, it was a mother, father, son, and daughter. And the father did all the speaking, and they just stood there, and people were asking him questions. And I, you know, at first I was like, come on, these aren't real vampires. But the more, I mean, their eyes, man, Richard, you used to see these guys' eyes. They were just, they looked, I don't know. And when they looked at you, it's like they looked right through you. And they had this presence that I've never seen. And their whole thing, the reason why they were there was they were trying to explain that there's a lot of them around, that they walk among us, that a lot of myths about them weren't true, but some of them were. He spoke very calmly. But you got the sense you just don't screw with them, you know. You don't, like, you wouldn't hit them with a spitball or anything like that. You got the sense that they had been around for like decades, you know, millions, you know, like a long, long time.
Centuries, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, centuries. And but he said they didn't. Some of them did drink blood, but that was considered old fashioned. That a lot of them just take your energy. And that they were among us. And I just remember thinking, holy crap, I think I actually saw a freaking vampire, you know. They didn't have these fangs or anything like that. They just looked old. They looked like they were dead, but they were alive.
How do you go back to Minneapolis, St. Paul and after that and resume your regular schoolwork, do your homework?
Yeah, right. It didn't work all that great for me. Everything started changing because of that, because everything, like I said, had different meaning, you know, like,
I guess, Michael, listen, I gotta step away here and do some business. Stay with us. We'll come back and, continue to discuss Michael Bodine's remarkable life, growing up psychic from skeptic to believer. And we will do that in moments. Here's The Who taking us into the break with Get Active on Coast to Coast AM. The Rolling Stones and Rocks Off from 1972's epic Exile on Main Street. And my spies over in Europe, where the Rolling Stones are touring right now, tell me that the Rolling Stones have dusted this old chestnut off and they're performing it live again for the first time in perhaps decades. Hikers exploring a mountain trail in Colorado came upon a monstrous surprise in the form of an enormous Bigfoot cutout lurking in the woods. Our webmaster Greg Bishop has posted that story in the highlights section up at the website Coast to Coast AM.com. Hey, if you like what you're hearing tonight, this morning, I invite you to check out my weekly syndicated radio program. It's called The Conspiracy Show. It airs Sunday nights at 11 p.m. Eastern out of Toronto on a 50,000 watt clear channel. It's called Zoomer Radio, and you can pick up that signal really through much of the eastern United States after dark, thanks to a little atmospheric skip from Maine to Minnesota, south to the Carolinas, and we also have about 35 affiliates across North America. For more information, visit my website, strangeplanet.ca, and we also live stream on YouTube. The YouTube channel is The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button. Say hello on Twitter at Richard Serrett, and please follow. Back more of the wild life of Michael Bodine, born psychic from skeptic to believer, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Michael Bodine is with us, the author of Born Psychic from Skeptic to Believer. At what point, Michael, were you befriended by this ghost child?
Well, that was one of the camps that I went to. This is another little camp, but this camp is all about spirit guides and guardian angels and all that kind of stuff. And this was, I don't know, some place I think in South Dakota we went. And at this one particular place, this guy, apparently he drew pictures of people like a guardian angel. And so I went in and this guy drew this picture of this kid. I was probably 11 or 12 then. And he drew this picture of this kid who was also 11 or 10. And he said that he was my guardian angel, which I don't think he really was, but he was a kid that was growing up with me, according to this guy, with me in spirit, like, you know, around me to observe or whatever. And so he drew this picture, and his name was Jerry. And when I brought this picture home and I hung it up, and I started noticing this guy, I could see him. I mean, I could see him. Not only I could see him, but my like friends and stuff, with my mom and all that stuff could see him. And so at first it was great because he was kind of helpful. He was kind of helpful with like school. He'd give me answers on tests and stuff, or he'd help me with like girls, you know, what they thought and what they were thinking. And it was, for the first couple of years, it was great. It was like, he was helping me learn about my psychic stuff. And at the same time, he was kind of living through me, you know, growing up. And
he would just show up whenever. Did you have to summon him, or was he always there hovering?
He was a hoverer. Yeah, he was always kind of hovering. And it didn't get, you know, one of the things that we did back then was after my father left probably when I was like 10. And when that happened, the house just went nuts. I mean, psychics were living with us, and it was like a full blown just psychic everything. And we all started kind of, my brothers and sisters started drinking and started doing drugs. And so there was like
I gotta tell you, I can't blame you. I mean, not that we obviously advise this sort of thing, but my gosh, to have this foisted upon you,
it seemed like a natural thing to do. So there was the kind of the upstairs where everybody was practicing and they were doing the light stuff, you know, working in the light, and then down in the basement where everybody was getting drunk and stoned and stuff. That was kind of like the dark stuff. And Jerry was starting to really like the whole dark side of it all, you know, the doing the drugs thing and the drinking. And that's when it started getting bad, because I'd wait, you know, I'd kind of black out here and there, not just when drinking, but I would just kind of black out. It was almost like Jerry was just kind of jumping inside me. Part of it was because I was giving him permission to do that. But we had this we had a pretty good relationship, so I felt pretty comfortable with him. And
Michael, I'm just going to jump in here for a second because I think you're on a seller accord list. If you could just maybe find one spot and just hang out there, because I think maybe you're moving around a little bit. I get the sense, and it's play and habit that they're connections.
Can you hear me now?
That's better. Good. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, I'd wake up, or I'd like come to, and I'd be standing on the edge of the roof, you know, and it'd be like Jerry wanted to know what it was like to jump off a roof, or I'd be in these weird situations where I wasn't aware of what I was doing, and then all of a sudden I'd be aware of it, and it started to become bad. Our relationship started to become bad because Jerry started to get more and more darker, and then I went through treatment when I was 14, drug and rehab treatment, and so I stopped doing drugs when I was 14 and drinking, and Jerry didn't like that. He wanted to keep going with all that lifestyle, and so that's when eventually we had this. One of our teachers was a lady named Bertie. This lady was like 1,000 years old, and she wore the same dress, and she had like one tooth in her mouth. She looked like the sea hag, but she was really really a good psychic. She was like Yoda, you know. She knew everything about everything, and she was the one that approached me and said, "Look, we got to get rid of Jerry because he's causing you a lot of harm." So we actually had to do a little exorcism with Jerry to get him out.
So what are we saying here? Jerry was demonic?
Well,
who was Jerry?
Jerry was supposedly, what I was told originally was he was my spirit guide, but he really wasn't. He was just this kid that was growing up with me on the other side. And so, you know, the whole demon thing, I'm not a big, you know, some people talk about demons and they're really in demon. I don't really believe that. I just think that he was just more darker. You know, he wanted to get in more trouble. He just liked the whole rush of, you know, just doing bad things. And so
he was a bad kid when he was alive, and nothing changed on the other side.
I think so. Yeah. I think that's what happened. I think at first he just pretended or was acting more friendly just to kind of get to know me. And, but it, you know, it turned out bad, because he was scaring friends of mine. You know, if he thought that somebody was mean to me, he would show up at their house and scare the hell out of them. And when I wasn't even around, or one time this guy, he was kind of a bully. You know, I got myself in a lot of trouble because of my mouth. I was just kind of a sarcastic kid, and anyway, I had words with this guy, and him and his buddies were walking home, and somebody tapped him on the shoulder and took him down there, and, you know, freaked them all out. And you know, they ran. One guy ran in the middle of the street and almost got hit by a car. And you know, it was stuff like that. That was just it was turned into a bad relationship.
And was the exorcism successful?
Yeah, it was. Normally what you do, like when you do a ghost busting or an exorcism is you try and take the spirit or the enemy, whatever it is, and you try to bring it to the other side. You know, you try to bring it to the light, and then it crosses over and then everything's good. But in this case, Dirty just wanted him out. So he didn't cross over to the other side. He just took off, and he didn't come back. And I did see him. I did a ghost busting about 20 years later, really bad ghost busting. You know, they were really into the devil worshippers, and it was just a really heavy ghost busting place. And I saw him. I saw Jerry. He was he was like the main guy that was causing all these issues. Cats were being killed, and, you know, weird stuff like that. And that's the last time I saw him. I saw him at this ghost busting thing, and we kind of had words, and he took off, and, you know, but that was the last time I saw him.
Right. When you were getting into alcohol and drugs, Michael, is it because it was just something you wanted to experiment with, or were you trying to, you know, basically make this gift go away? Gift, I put that in parentheses.
Absolutely. Anything I could think of to sabotage this thing, I would have I would have gone easily. Yeah, and so for me, that's what it was. And I think for the rest of us, it was just like, screw this, you know? We didn't like the way it was. And so for me, it was the way to kind of shut off all the feelings I was having and the seeing the ghosts and all that stuff. It was just, I was pissed, you know? I just didn't like it, so.
And how did this affect the relationship with your mother? Because she kind of dragged you into this.
Yeah, she was a recovering alcoholic. So she just kind of put up with it for a while. And then finally, one day at school, I had gotten stoned right before school. And I had overdosed, actually, on some stuff. And I woke up in the nurse's office, and she was there with the principal's office, with the principal. And they gave me a choice in either jail or treatment. So I had to go to treatment. So she just kind of gave me the throat to kill myself, and then she enough is enough. So she didn't like it, but she, at the time, there really wasn't much she could do because the house was just crazy. We had people living with us. We had psychics everywhere. We had, it was just nuts. And so she didn't really have a lot of control of things back then. But finally, at one point, she just put her foot down and got rid of most of the psychics and cleaned up the basement when things started to get really bad, because it actually only made it worse as far as spirits, because a lot of the spirits that were attracted to the whole drugs and alcohol thing, they started showing up at the house, and they're a lot heavier, you know, they're a lot more visible and more dramatic, and so, it just got to be too much for her and actually everybody. But
I guess. So, yeah. At what point in your life, Michael, did you decide that you were going to just, it is what it is, and you decided to embrace it?
Well, there was a point where I was scared to death of ghosts. I really was. I they gave me the creeps. And Bertie said that I needed to learn how to overcome my fear of ghosts. And so we went on this ghost busting, which... I was scared to death. And her thinking was that if I confronted my fear, that I would get over it and then I could move on. We went to this place. The realtors had called my mother. By that time, people had heard about my mom and heard about our family and said, knew that what we did. You know, it was funny because people would talk bad about us during the day, but then they would sneak in through the back door and get readings from my mom. And this one realtor came to her and said that they can't sell this house. It's a beautiful house, but they couldn't sell it because, you know, the realtors would be chased out by these ghosts, and they didn't know what to do. So they asked my mom if she would come and you know, deal with it. So Bertie and my mom felt it was a good idea if I went on this ghost busting, and so we did. And my mom felt that the best time to go to a ghost busting was between 12 and 3 o'clock in the morning. They felt that was the best time. So we went to this place at like midnight, and this place was scary as hell. It was probably the scariest ghost busting I've ever done because I didn't know anything about how to deal with them, or I really thought that they could kill you and do all these things to you. And so we go, and the place had been boarded up by that time because they didn't know what to do with it. So we had to actually break in, and we broke in through the back door. And I remember just being scared to death. And we went in, and we had flashlights and candles, and we had a little radio. And my mom's idea was that we were just going to stay there. We had to stay there all night. And, if a spirit did show up, we were going to confront it. So we went in, and we had a couple other people with us. So we go through the back door. And when you came in through the back door, there was this open area where the living room was, and then you could see forward, and at the front door there was a big staircase, that big winding staircase that went up to the second floor, and then to your left there was this room that just had a black door on it. It didn't even have a door handle, just the door was painted black, and then to the right was the furniture that was all covered up with sheets and stuff like you'd saw in an old scary movie. And so we set up, you know, we got their candles going, and we walked around, just kind of checked the place out, nothing was going on. And then all of a sudden, the radio started kind of going in and off, you know, off and on, off and on. And then it felt like the pressure in the house was being sucked out, because you could almost feel the air being pushed out, and the candles started blowing out. So we had to turn on the flashlights, and even those were kind of, you know, hit or miss. And then we started hearing somebody upstairs walking. And then all of a sudden, all the doors just slammed shut. You could hear the ones upstairs slamming shut, and the black door room slammed shut. And it was like this feeling like somebody was going to come and kill you. And I remember just being terrified. And then we saw these two people that were with us. One of them started to go upstairs to see what was going on, or if there was somebody coming. And he was walking up the staircase, and his foot went right through the staircase. And so you could see his foot. It was one of those staircases, you know, that was like it was an open staircase kind of thing. And
sure, sure.
And so his foot gets stuck, and he's starting to get nervous because he can hear somebody coming, you know, coming towards him on the top of the staircase. And there was this noise in the black door room of this little girl crying for her mom. And she was kept going, "Mommy, Mommy," you know, like she was crying. And it was just, it was freaking scary as hell. And it's just,
why did you stay, Michael? Why would you stay?
I agree. I think it's child abuse, if you ask me. But
you know what? I'm glad you made that point, because I was thinking this whole time you've been on the air with me, I've been thinking, my God, why would anybody put a child through this?
Well, you know, the weird thing about it was Bertie had told my mom that I was going to be a psychic, and that I was going to do a lot of ghost bustings, that I was going to become very strong with it, powerful with it, and that it was part of my destiny to do this stuff. So I think for her, for my mom, she felt that it was part of my training or something. I just thought it was nuts. But like I said, it kept building and building, and finally this walking upstairs is getting closer to that guy, and he's screaming, and I'm yelling, "Mom, we got to get out of here, we got to get out of here." And my mom finally just yelled, "Stop," really loud, and everything stopped. The doors opened up. The guy was able to get his foot out. The radio went back on, and I remember the song "Sugar Sugar" by the Archies came on, and it was like the ride was over. And I remember thinking, you know, this did not have the effect that they wanted. I was even more afraid of ghosts, and it was because of that experience. I thought, you know, I got to figure out a way not to be afraid, and so I think it was at that point where I just said, screw it, I'm going to learn how to deal with ghosts, and I did.
But all right, you did well.
My mom, when everybody was leaving, after my mom said, screw it, everybody's got to get out, and she cleaned out the house, basically, when my mom wasn't there and nobody was home, I was afraid to be at home, because you could see ghosts everywhere. It was really easy to see ghosts. And so I would sit out in this cul-de-sac, in this round cul-de-sac. There was a little island out in the cul-de-sac, and I would wait for my mom to get home because I was scared to death. And I was, you know, I was coming up, you know, I was 12 or whatever, and, you know, I was embarrassed because I was afraid to go into the house by myself. And so one night I was standing there sitting on this thing, and I was freezing. You know, it gets really cold up here in the fall, and it was in November. And I saw these ghosts by the windows and walking by, and I thought, screw this, I'm done being afraid. And I started walking across the house, and
Michael, I'm gonna jump in here because your phone line is rapidly deteriorating again. So we're gonna call you back and see if we can't establish a better line. I don't know if it's your old friend Jerry coming to call to run some interference, but we'll reestablish contact. Michael Bodine is the author of Born Psychic, From Skeptic to Believer. His Bill Withers taking us into the break with Use Me. We'll open up the phone lines, questions and comments. For Michael Bodine, all that awaits on the other side. Coast to Coast AM. Stay with us.